It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
Truth be told, I really had a hard time believing this. It was hard to fathom that this could really happen or was really happening to our beloved Republic. I don't know how any other way to put that, people. I really had a hard time digesting this. And as I've really started to look at a lot of the evidence and have been just, you know, entrenched into this in past days and weeks, as you know, I was almost myself in a state of denial. This within myself, I'm saying that this can't be right. I mean, it can't be right. And I tried to convince myself somehow that it really wasn't happening. Because listen, my fellow Americans, I am always truthful with you and honest with you. You know, I even hesitated when I called the first hour the United Banana Republic of America. It hurts me, it pains me to say that, and I don't know how else to put it to you. But I think when you look at what has taken place now and transpired, and this is not what I'm saying transpired yesterday, overnight, or last week, or last year. This has been building for some time now. You can't get to the level of what we're speaking about today and think that this just happened and Trump is the cause. And now I suggest to you this. You know, you talk about a glass house, and who lives in a glass house and who exactly is throwing the rocks? Well, America at this point stands in the balance here of freedom, of liberty, of the courts of this global community we live in here on planet Earth is the way I start. This is my testimony now today I give to you. And I think with a sense of humility and pride for our great republic. I guess where we go one, we go all now, don't we? We come to this moment of truth in our nation. And I've been ringing the bell for some times that Michael reminds me of all the time, get involved, get loud. I have sensed the urgency of this need. It has been a calling to get to the microphone and talk to Americans and really just be the beacon of truth and the beacon of honor and liberty, which is what our game plan here is at America Out Loud. So on that point, there's a lot to talk about today, and I want to welcome you to another Viewpoint Presents here. This is Malcolm, along with Michael Johns. Michael, I think we are at this most challenging moment of our history. I've tried to deny it. I really don't, I can't put it out there any other way. You know how much I love our country, as much as you love our country. Right. And we're patriots through and through. And I've been in a denial mode for a bit here, thinking this really couldn't be happening. And we missed something, Michael, or I missed something. I missed some sort of a press conference or something that would have made this all right. And then I woke up and I thought, by golly, this really is happening. And it goes deeper than what we even know right now to the likes of what we're seeing. And we've been talking and barking in recent times of the FBI and the DOJ and, you know, the Department of Justice and Homeland Security. And where are all these organizations, which I actually talked about up front. And, you know, and then you see all of this and we've been seeing the bankrupting of our nation and all of these organizations. And then you see what's happening with this widespread scandal and the stolen election. And there are so many unanswered questions. But I think at this moment, Michael, I think America as we knew it, I have to say to you, is no longer. We are fighting for our very survival, and we are headed toward a moment of confrontation in our nation. I don't know what that looks like, and I'm not suggesting to you I know, but I know it's not business as usual, and we're headed somewhere. What is your feelings? What's your testimony today, sir?
Well, I started with the fact, which I think you and I have been fairly almost alone in recognizing that while we face extraordinary opposition and you know, even evil and criminality on the other side of the political spectrum, we have failed to accept responsibility ourselves. And even in the presentation at this critical moment of what certainly appear to be very credible allegations of vast fraudulent activity, almost in a criminal conspiracy-like way, not, you know, one or two individuals sort of acting on a state level, but a national plan. I'm astonished with the fact that leaders on our side, media outlets on our side, with the exception of you and a few others, are not rising to this moment. They're shrinking to this moment. They're seeing it as an opportunity to capitulate to the conventional mainstream media wisdom, which hasn't even investigated this and which has just utterly discounted it, as they've discounted and ignored other facts that aren't convenient to their political attack and their political design on removing the president. So all of it starts with a recognition that we're not going to solve this necessarily outside of courtrooms and legal proceedings. That's why it's so impressive and hugely valuable that you've just had Sidney Powell, a great American, and let me just say this about Sidney Powell, an incredibly credible voice, not someone who ever would put her lifelong professional credibility on the line with wild accusations that were not backed by sound evidence that she's reviewed. That's my sense of her, and that's my sense of Rudy Giuliani, one of the great Americans, an underappreciated American whose entire career has been dedicated to the battle of good versus evil, of justice versus injustice, of freedom versus totalitarianism. A man who, you know, all the way back to breaking up the five mob families in New York City, and you think of the totality of accomplishments that he's pulled together in a multi-decade career, these are two people that, in my judgment, the burden, when you're sitting there and you're trying to assess the credibility, you lean toward being believing, not disbelieving toward this. And yet here are the people on our side, you know, including article I'm reading right now in National Review, founded by Bill Buckley, probably the premier conservative publication in the history of America, utterly discounting this thesis based on an argument that itself doesn't make sense and itself is void of facts that we know are already established and ones that I think will soon be established. So I'm disappointed. So I start with the fact that it's an unusual point, I guess, maybe to start with, but that we grew up sort of thinking, well, could you imagine like a vast conspiracy in which like a U.S. presidential election was rigged? Yeah, that's a great movie plot, but you would never envision that actually occurring. And yet here we have two of America's most credible voices who've done a lot of things in American justice, bold things too, and been pretty successful at it, and who have never, to my knowledge, misled us about anything, telling us this has occurred. And you've got everyone scurrying to discount it without access to evidence and without really any serious investigation. Like, no one's sitting outside Dominion offices right now in Canada demanding answers. They're sitting outside Pence's White House press briefing to scream at him about why he's not handing the presidency to Joe Biden.
Yeah, I've heard reports that Dominion has been closing these offices and scaling back. And is that what you've heard? All kinds of funny things?
Yeah, there's all sorts of activity. I mean, for starters, you know, when you face an issue like this, the messaging on it is important. Because if I rattle off 20 things that were factually true and I knew to be true right now, it almost becomes too much for an American who's not deep in the weeds on this to absorb it. And you can get distracted by components of it. And this is one thing that I've noticed in American journalism and media coverage of this story is any misstatement of fact. Oh, did they seize on it? I've never seen so many fact correcting articles as I have in the Trump presidency, where they'll take some granular detail that really is a sideshow to the main thesis. So the main thesis is totally correct. But the fact that this one granular detail was somehow misstated as an example to discredit the broader and much more relevant and important central point about what's going on. And we're seeing it now in the coverage of this case, which is why all of us who do place confidence in Rudy and Sidney, as I do, full 110% confidence, also have simultaneously an obligation to augment their work with being credible, fact-based, even as emotions run high on this issue, because it is incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
As I'm sure it is to you, as it is to me.
Oh yeah. So when you reference like national review,
it's not just the magnitude of opposition on the left or in the mainstream media that we sort of have come to anticipate, but once again, how unreliable our leaders and these institutions and in our movement who have been the beneficiaries of billions with a B of dollars over the last few decades to ensure that we would never arrive at a point like this.
Right.
Have not only allowed us to arrive at this point, but as we scrambled to try to defend representative democracy and to make sure that this is thoroughly assessed, evaluated, and prosecuted, and that the changes, if any, in our electoral outcome are made before hopefully Inauguration Day, I feel the support isn't there. Now, we're going to build the support. You'll be a part of that. Others are going to be a part of that. Sidney Powell is talking to you for a reason. And the reason which you should be very reassured by is that you also are a credible, major national voice who is not wedded to just saying things for political effect. You're a fact-based person, as I am. And, you know, I know how we would both shudder if we had misstated or overstated or misrepresented something. We would immediately correct it and feel bad about it. That's not true of everybody in this profession, but it is true of us.
That's right.
And, you know, what an incredible, you know, really national news generating interview to have, you know, the major counsel on this most critical issue, maybe ever confronting our country.
Well, definitely.
Speaking with you as this begins to unfold and we see where it goes. And, you know, so kudos to you, Malcolm, on that. And I hope the country will take notice of what an extraordinary resource you and America Out Loud are becoming in American media and in providing an outlet for fact-based, important fact-based, you know, reporting and analysis on these vital issues.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you for that. When you speak about National Review, and we talk about even Fox News, and we talk about so many others that fit into that category here. So what I'm really wondering as we dig into this a little bit more, you know, Michael, is I ask myself this now, are they in denial because of what? Or are they, is it so out there? Because it was a conspiracy, let's be clear with everybody, conspiracy is just a plan. It's a plan to commit something. It's a bigger plan. Right. That's all it is, people.
RICO case started as a conspiracy theory, right?
Yeah, right. But everybody takes the word conspiracy to mean it's not true, but that's not what it means. It's a plan of action. It means that it's a conspiracy to commit something, to do something. And in this case here, do you think these national reviews and Fox News and all these others, do you think, Michael, do you think maybe it's not plausible? I talked about the word plausible up front, the plausibility factor. Do you think they've convinced themselves of that? Or do you think they're just in denial? Or do you think they've given up somehow? Or they, I mean, where's the rubber meet the road with these people? Why is it they see things so differently than you and I?
I think this is very blunt, but it's a first person observation based on over 30 years of interaction with these guys, who I generally, I'm going to be clear, I respect in a certain way, and I view as, you know, important mediums and for whom I've written and worked. So, but I think at the end of the day, here's what's sad is that like most grassroots conservatives could care less what Haley Jackson or you know, Major Garrett or John Carl, who I've known forever, he used to be an incredibly great guy, now the ABC White House correspondent, or Jim Acosta, or any of these figures who are driving the narrative have to say or care or what their opinions are. But in certain elitist segments of our movement, those individuals actually care more about their opinions than they do our opinions. And it's a product of elitism and disengagement and being predominantly New York City or Washington, D.C. based. I saw this throughout the 2016 election when I clashed on Fox with Rich Lowry over my position about supporting the president, and he, by the way, being the heir to Buckley after his passing, of the predominant editorial figure of National Review, And, you know, I'll quote him exactly, I believe, where he said that my individual work was handing the White House to Hillary Clinton. That's the way they viewed it, and they presented it publicly, and they had no problem challenging, you know, my position in primetime television. But when it comes to these figures who kind of, they still have reverence for those that are running the elite institutions of the left and the elite institutions in our media, whereas others, and like Dinesh D'Souza, who you've had on several times, another great, just very, hugely valuable American asset for truth and intelligent commentary, have sort of discounted like what these people have to say. And we're sort of beyond it. We're kind of at the point where we feel, obviously, this issue of a rigged U.S. presidential election is priority 1, 2, and 3. There's nothing else that can, that warrants almost any singular focus right now. But once we get beyond this, we have to ponder some deeper questions. Like, so you have, in this case of Dominion, just take for example, you have a system. It wasn't like this was a secret to anyone that this system was known for its technical vulnerabilities and the ease with which it could be, votes could be manipulated. Texas 3 times was asked to acquire these systems. Not only did they say no, but to their great credit, they issued stunning public reports about all the glaring deficiencies to try to warn people not to do it. Louisiana, their technicians looked at it and rejected. Even the historically politically corrupt city of Philadelphia looked at it and rejected it. And then there were all these international examples and criminal components to these examples. We're now asked to believe, which is one of the points I think American people should ponder for a second, that 30 of our 50 states and 2,000 individual jurisdictions were asked to go out and acquire a voting system. And they had individuals who were paid by taxpayer dollars, government employees, either secretaries of state on a state level or election officials, who looked at all of the options available, of which there are dozens, maybe hundreds, and said, yes, let's go with this system. This Dominion system looks like the best option of all of those available. That, to me, is an incredible failure for starters on our side, meaning we can't say, we had to stop being the victim, like this stuff was thrust upon us. Where was the Republican National Committee when these systems were being adopted? And we knew, anyone who had spent even an hour looking into this would have known that these were unreliable systems that shouldn't be employed anywhere in this country. Nowhere is the answer. And yeah, this is the stunning recognition of the moment. Is that the precise, well, I think we always had in the back of our mind, mm-hmm, and every individual conservative activist has in the back of their mind, that when the rubber really hits the road, when freedom is on the eve of being exterminated, at least in a procedural way, mm-hmm, meaning we become permissive, mm-hmm, and disbelieving that the U.S. presidential election has been rigged and altered, we have also simultaneously believed that there were these giant institutions or figures, bold Americans out there with vast resources who would never allow something like that to happen. The stunning recognition, which is a real revelation about why this movement of ours requires attention once we get through this, is that I'm not seeing any of that. I'm not seeing any institution or prominent individual aside from the two great attorneys I just mentioned, mm-hmm, who themselves are employees,
yeah,
who are rising to this moment.
Yeah, well,
this is an incredibly embarrassing moment, mm-hmm, in American history, regardless of the outcome of this.
That's
whole
the way
thing.
I feel right there, the embarrassing moment for sure. You know, you mentioned when you talk about Giuliani and Sidney Powell there, and I've thought a lot about that as well as what you just said. You know, when you see the level of people that are stepping out, Michael, there's no way to believe that they would tarnish not just their reputations and their professionalism, but their lives to the level of what we're talking about here. And that's kind of the first thing I seen when I paused a moment internally and said, wait a minute here. I mean, it's either one of two things at that point, Michael. I either recognize that, okay, these people are either crackpots or one went over the cuckoo's nest, or they're onto the biggest heist of a country that we've seen, that we would talk about like this happened like it happened in Venezuela somewhere, or Colombia, or some other, despondent country somewhere, some other third world.
It has happened.
Exactly. And so you start to think that way, and you think, wow, wait a minute. It's hard to wrap your mind around all this. And as I start to look at it, you and I, you've heard me so many times on air talk about, Michael, this historic moment of time we're living in. I've had this feeling for some time that this is never going to be business as usual. This is last few years now I'm speaking here. There was some driving mechanism in me, and I can't explain it any other way than something had got me wide awake here, basically with my mission here with God Almighty to take on the masses here and get this message out there. And I've thought more and more long and hard about that. And here we are at this moment of time where everything, it doesn't seem, back to the plausibility factor. I mean, we're talking about the beloved United States of America. And so, Michael, when I say this, and it pains me to say, can you convince me? Because right now, when you look at all the levers of power that have come down against our great nation right now, and not to mention, what I talked about with Justice Alito coming out and talking about the constitutional stress test with all of these mayors and governors and everything that's happened with COVID and the lockdowns and the things that continue to strip our liberties away. And then the stealing of a country in the election. And then I say to you this, if I say to you, could you prove to me that we're better than any third world banana republic? Could you prove that?
Is obviously, I'm right 100% with you, and that's where my thinking has actually been, because I not only rhetorically have been out front on this, but a part of my career was actually with an organization called the International Republican Institute, funded by the State Department and the Agency for International Development, to go out around the world, which I did, and instruct developing democracies on how to build a democratic constitution, rule of law based civil society and political society, and all the components of that, the role of a political party, the role of a platform, the role of the balance of powers, the role of the rule of law, the role of independent media, that we're in a moment, as you correctly say, that's not at all really dissimilar from those situations. And that even up against all of these clearly very well coordinated, well funded, sophisticated operatives designed to undermine the representative democracy, the foundation of our country, the reason the first bullet was shot at Concord in 1775, and that so much blood has been spilled ever since, is not apparently. We have a generation of even individuals who are employed and compensated to rise to this moment, who are silent, disbelieving, and even undermining the cause of this. And on our side, not even just, in general, non-ideological institutions. So the answer is, how objectively can I say with a straight, here's what I will say. This system is functioning that way. You would never allow them this. We would never be in this predicament if it didn't have all those components. However, the only thing that can make us different is how the American people now respond to this moment. And I would say that's been my position over the last week or two, is that typically when we've had a major challenge to the structural foundations of our country, whether whatever it was, with challenges to our freedoms, the establishment of the freedom, the defense of our freedom in multiple conflicts, the civil rights movement, Lincoln in the Civil War, Reagan in the Cold War. We've had great leaders who've emerged to help us navigate through it to light and out of the darkness. Who now in this moment of where we are at the crossroads of an unbelievable precedent that I believe will be very difficult to roll back. Meaning this is not now a question of that's restricted to, you know, our admiration of Donald Trump. It's a position I like to think I would have regardless of any candidates involved who would allow this to occur and not feel the sense of urgency and lead and the call for leadership on this. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just got to recognize, yeah. And I recognized this in 2009 when we founded the Tea Party movement, that the answer is in you, you know, and that's my position right now is, you know, if you're out there, and I know there's millions of Americans right now who are looking at this situation, both shocked, disbelieving, disgusted, but also asking themselves, well, what can I do? You know, I mean, I think our answer is, you know, follow me, get involved, because we're going to have a response. I can't predict the outcome of it. I can't even really predict all of the substance that's going to be revealed as it relates to the court filings. But I can say unequivocally, no reservation, that the issue of the defense of our representative democracy, we will rise to this moment, I will rise to this moment, and we're not going to allow this to we're not going to look back on this and wish we had done more than we had. But it is a tragic, incredible recognition of our own side's failures that we've allowed ourselves to be here. And yet I'm looking, say 30 states. Wouldn't the first logical state be you would identify every single individual who is responsible for acquiring this vulnerable system and at least have terminated them by now? Not one person fired, no accountability. Where's the, you know, I mean, it's, I guess, you know, in some strange way, it would be funny to see Rudy Giuliani looking under the podium when he's saying, where's the FBI and DOJ? But we know who they are. Mm-hmm. They made their decision. They've chosen sides largely at a high level, not at every level, but at a high level. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been partisan players. This was an opportunity for them to emerge and really rebuild their credibility as a neutral source of law enforcement.
Yeah. Well,
I don't see any evidence of that.
What we are really talking about here is a transformational moment for America here. Michael puts it out there so well as you hear him talk about it. And to phrase up what he's saying, it is a transformational moment. You know, there's a good part of me. Let me explain to listeners now at this point here. There's a good part of me in knowing Michael as I do. He is typically a man of fact. And doesn't do theories, fairy theories, let's call them, but, you know, the theory part of the conspiracy that tend to make all these stories go south doesn't really play in those areas as much as I don't either. We deal with real fact-based, again, data situations. What are we dealing with? How do we fix it? You know, a couple of important things he just says there that are so vital. I want you to think about this, my fellow Americans, and it's this. How does America respond? And how do Americans respond? That really is the catch-all of this very moment, isn't it? That's going to be the defining moment. And we're going to have to spend some time on that now in the days ahead on our platform, on our network. We're going to have to spend some time on this and look at this. And how does America respond? And how do Americans respond to the moment? If there's going to be a differentiator, it's going to have to be that. You understand what I'm saying here? So, you know, this sort of thing took place. You know, there was part of me that was kind of expecting or hoping that he might hit back. See, look, Malcolm, because he's so practical. You see, you're out of your mind a minute. Where are you going here, man? You're in a canoe somewhere in a lake with, you know, where are yours? Can you find your way back, buddy? You know, I expected somebody to wake me up from that kind of a dream or nightmare, kind of say, well, wake up. You start hitting you on the face or pouring water on your face, you know. But isn't that kind of the moment we get to where you almost can't rationalize the irrational? You know, you can't. How is it plausible again? Where are we really at? It's an interesting way to look at it. And then I was, because we hadn't explored this, as Michael will tell you later, that I typically like to have these conversations on air. This is not all discussed off air. I always cut people off saying, no, let's have this on air, because everybody wants to talk off air and say, no, let's get the mic hot. Then let's talk about it, please. And that's how you get authenticity and a response of the kinds of things we're talking about here in real conversation that is heartfelt, soulful, and just entirely truthful, the out loud truth. So interesting point to make it. So we're going to pause here on Viewpoint Presents. We appreciate you being here on this truly amazing moment of our history and our time. When we come back from the pause, you're going to hear the voice of Joe Biden in a clip here, an audio clip, very interesting clip, in some comments he made a while back about this that I want to get Michael's opinion on and his thoughts on. So you'll hear that first, and then we'll discuss what Joe Biden knew or didn't know about this whole fiasco, as well as, well, how do Americans respond back? We'll pick all that up, friends, just after this pause.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
What if a new treatment backed by 17,000 scientific articles was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
Secondly, we're in a situation where we have put together, and you guys did it for our administration, the President Obama's administration before this. We have put together, I think, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in the history of American politics.
We join you back here on Viewpoint Presents, and you hear the clip here of Joe Biden. And Michael, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. This is what he said up front. And, you know, we've had a lot of talk about his health and people in his condition. Very often they have those utterances where they say things and they don't even realize they told you things they shouldn't have. And I wonder how you would sum that up, what he says there when he talks about the voter fraud organization, the most extensive and inclusive voter fraud organization in history. What do you take out of that?
Yeah, I mean, we all heard that. That, of course, was before the election. I think, you know, at the time, it was recognized to be just another in a long, long, long series of misstatements. And of course, now people question whether it wasn't, in fact, a Freudian slip of, you know, a revealing a reality that they were potentially involved in. You know, and the biggest error we make is in these situations is conjecture. So I don't know what that meant, which of those two options it was, but it was one of the two. I mean, it's not like a third option. Either was, once again, because he's struggling physically and mentally, in my judgment, just misspeaking, or, you know, whether, you know, this, as certainly seems to be the case, whoever has perpetuated this fraud, whether even the Biden campaign was involved or not involved, because, you know, it's entirely possible to give him the benefit, the great benefit of the doubt, that this could all occur to his benefit without the campaign's involvement. Of course, that's possible. There's a lot of forces in the world that want to see Joe Biden in control because they see him as a weak leader who's not going to stand up against, you know, our predominant geoeconomic and geopolitical rival now in China. There's a whole bunch of people that, you know, Iran, who will be in a, you know, basically we're going to have sanctions lifted against Iran, billions upon billions of dollars people are prepared to make if he is sworn in on January 20th. So you got all these global and domestic forces that aren't really immediately partisan or political, and somehow we feel incapable of kind of getting beyond the political paradigm of all this. I think it's just extraordinary that this magnitude of fraud could even be conceivable without somewhere along the line, someone unearthing it before now. And even now, as we're unearthing it, even now as whistleblowers are coming forward and signing affidavits, even as we have global example after global example, and as I said, two of the more credible legal minds in our country with very distinguished public histories of service and public life, telling us, not suggesting that it's possible, not suggesting that we need to look into it, not suggesting that this is some sort of ongoing investigation, but telling us definitively that this occurred. I think Sidney Powell had referred to the challenge of not a minimal amount of evidence, but the challenge of such overwhelming evidence that it was like, you know, drinking from a fire hose. You know, the evidence was that extensive, that we still have, like, even on our own side, without really, I guess, unfairly pointing out individual names, because I would exclude a lot, the primary individuals in our party, in our movement, and in journalistic entities that were created for this sort of moment to investigate, right? Because I'm not even saying, hey, go tell the world everything and just assume these facts. But there's not even any kind of, you know, little bit of intellectual curiosity into researching or investigating these things. Every report that is out there is when you see the phrase voter fraud in an article, in a mainstream media article, is there's always this adjective before it designed to completely, present to the readership that it's debunked, conspiracy minded, discredited, unproven, baseless.
That's what they're doing.
The last breath of Donald Trump's dictatorship, you know, all these crazy things, like in news articles, not opinion pieces. And what we're saying is this is not even Trump who's really presenting this argument. These are individuals who have bravely stepped forward as whistleblowers with all kinds of emerging evidence and two credible people who are telling us this occurred. And even the people on our side just are still apparently more interested in currying favor with established institutions that are looking to just get Trump out. They don't care how they get him out.
Well, is it that, or are they part of the plan? I've been asking that same question. Are they part of the plan, or is it just they want Trump out? I mean, which is it? I mean, you know?
I don't know. You know, so here, let me tell you one thing. Like, just give me one example. Typical person out there, I've pointed out probably to you and others that I'm puzzled by the people that we follow as purported leaders in our movement. But here's one guy that people would probably think pretty highly of, Dan Bongino. He's a no background in government, no background in public policy, member, he opened car doors for Obama as a Secret Service agent, ran a whole bunch of failed congressional candidates. But somehow, somewhere, at some moment, we decided this would be a premier leading voice to defend our side. And I came to be very believing and supportive of what I saw in him, even though he's not someone who really has any history. I mean, he doesn't go back decades in this thing. He kind of just dropped from nowhere a year or two ago, and it's been a leading voice. So you go to this Bongino report, which is one of his main media outlets, and I sort of quietly noted this last week that the leading section, which was Election 2020, that they had, and it's essentially a conservative news aggregation site, that they were doing a really good job kind of covering some of the major aggregation of articles related to this. All of a sudden, it quietly disappears this week, right? While all of this controversy emerges within the primary television news outlet that he's affiliated with, that apparently is also reached a conclusion that conversation related to this is not war, or news reports related to it is somehow not worthy of their attention. I'm stunned by that very question that you represent of why individuals would not see this as the opportunity to be bold leaders at a historic moment, as opposed to just shrink from it and you know, be essentially part of, in essence, in so doing, part of the problem.
You know, I haven't been to the Bongino Report in a long time. You're talking about the news aggregate site he had. So you think, what's the conclusion of that? I mean, they're not following it through now? They're not what?
I don't know. I was like, you know, it's kind of like, again, the dysfunction of our side is that I would typically sort of say, hey, man, what are you doing? I just, you know, is this just a curious oversight or did someone make an editorial error? But I don't think it's that. I think. You know, there's kind of this pressure that is building within our movement, as I've seen happen before, for us to capitulate and to resign ourselves to the reality of a Biden president. By the way, that pressure, you know, for a listener, is going to build in the days and weeks to come. Already today, Twitter announcing, hey, we're handing the POTUS, the cherished POTUS Twitter account, over to Joe Biden in January. You know, some of these institutions that never even existed, you know, a few decades ago, are now critical voices.
They're calling the shots. They're calling the shots. They are. It's
calling
a true
shots. Yeah.
That's nerve wracking.
So we're going to have like in early January, probably still contentious legal matters related to what the outcome of the November 3
election. Well, wait a minute.
Really
they can't do that till January 20th, right? The feed POTUS. I can't imagine they take that.
I think they can pretty much do whatever they want. And that's been kind of the way they've operated. And again, you know, but let me be just consistent in my messaging. Have we been permissive of that, right? I mean, in the last 4 years, have we taken one single step to hold them accountable for any of these issues? I mean, they still, all this rhetoric about, which you've championed too, about reclassifying them from a regulatory standpoint, to the point where now they acknowledge that they're in the business of determining what is and is not permissible discussion.
Oh, yeah.
And what is
it's
and
all
is
over the
fact,
place. It's all over
which,
the place.
Which, by the way, just to be blunt, how the hell would they know? How the hell would they know? Who is this guy, you know, with his raggedy beard, some Silicon Valley, you know, the guy who's had no experience in any of these fields emerged to determine that this theory is true and that theory is untrue. He has not reviewed the evidence. He has not dug into these issues. He has no authority on American presidential elections or politics.
Right.
But he has determined, and we must thus fall in line with the fact there was no fraud in this election.
Even worse than that, Michael, I love the image you paint out there with the beard and Jack Dorsey out there with him.
It looks like a homeless person, doesn't he?
My golly. Well, could be. Not to take anything away from the.
So I think he's probably not homeless, would be my guess.
Yeah, probably not. I think so. He probably owns the centers that they put them in. But listen, you know, when you mention that about him, what's even more egregious is they sit up there, and here's what I got out of the Senate part of the hearings that I heard, and you probably speak about it even more so, but they sit up there then knowing all this. They said, well, I did that. Yeah, we did that. Yeah, we probably shouldn't have. But yeah, we did do that. Yeah. Well, no, we probably shouldn't have. We're going to keep doing that. He doesn't give a rat's ass. He doesn't care, Michael.
The algorithm must have backfired. Do you think when they get in the boardroom after these congressional testimonies and they talk about algorithm, you know, not functioning properly, that just so happens to consistently penalize conservatives and never those on their side, that they just all sort of break out laughing? I do.
Mr. Algorithm. We want to meet Mr. Algorithm.
I mean, you know, and again, like, why are we even under any illusions about this? You go back to the Google Friday meeting after the Trump election in 16, where they said, we will never allow this to happen again. So now they're delivering. But here's the more relevant question.
Well,
so they're delivering in doing and playing the role that they promised us they would do.
That's it.
Our side is sitting here pointing out.
Well, I've spoken out about it many times. I know.
Our side is still sitting there going, they appear to have political bias. No, like we're way beyond that question, you know? I mean, and same with mainstream media.
Remarkable.
These guys, did you see the rage that they had about Pence not taking questions after that coronavirus briefing? They look like a pack of crazed animals. Who are these people? And why do we have them sitting in the West Wing of the White House?
Yeah. That's a great question, man.
I had the first thing I would have done is taken the entire press corps, moved them over to like the executive office building for starters, And the second thing is get rid of this assigned seating. Why do we have ABC, NBC, and you know, the major networks, CBS, sitting in this front row?
They don't deserve it.
I mean, when we've already concluded that they long, long ago, like not in the last year or two, long ago, forfeited this role of being premier authoritative neutral voices in American
journalism. Buddy. They should have built the press corps building right outside of the Los Angeles Zoo, is where it should be, right there, right where the monkeys and the giraffes and the other people are having a party, or... You know, but it is insane.
They consider themselves the government. I mean, this is the problem, is that, you know, one of the reasons they feel so empowered is that in the back of their minds, these people feel that it is their sole function, that they've been appointed to the role of assessing whether or not a president meets the qualifications, qualities that you know, 100 and whatever we got. You know, 60, 70 million Americans are worthy of. It's their role. That's how they see their role. Right. And so to them, you know, Donald Trump's been this aberration, this intern, basically. He'll be dismissed, and they will dismiss him one way or another because he's not deserving of the presidency in their eyes. And I think, you know, I'm sorry, they sit around, they got credible facts, and this has not been a perfect administration by any means. It's been a little sloppy in some ways. I'll acknowledge that. But that's not their role. Their role is not to sit there and decide who should and should not. And they've really become this arm of, in this case, the Biden transition team.
Yeah.
Saying, give up. Why are you not giving up? And they're like literally screaming at Pence on a press conference that had nothing to do with that issue. And it literally, when he's halfway down the hall, still screaming crazy people.
Well, let's take it a little bit further now. Let's do this here. Within all of this, Michael, that we're laying out here now, the other interesting takeaway I get is body language. I've been watching, I love to watch body language, Michael. I love to watch the psychology of people. And, you know, we talk a lot about, as we've just discussed, and I am perplexed, as I know you are perplexed, as I'm sure all listeners are perplexed, is what happened? Where did we go so bad, so wrong, so fast with the Fourth Estate and the media in this country? Listen, I rail against it every day. You know that, Michael. I rail against the social media giants and the tech giants every day. I rail against the system every day. I rail against the fight of good and evil every day of my life. I always do. I always have. But where do we go so wrong? You look at the body language. I've been thinking more about this body language, Mike. I want you to think about this and talk about this. But, you know, you look at how confident they were. So how confident were they? Now, I think back to the 26th campaign and the loss of Hillary Clinton. And we all remember how aghast they were. Now, according to the data and the facts of the people involved in this, this thing has been in the works for some time. That we've spoken with General McInerney. We've spoken with, against Sidney. We've spoken with other people who have seen this. And we've watched the bouncing ball of evidence, Michael, and this stuff has been building for some time. So then I think, well, why didn't they kind of tip the election in 2016? Well, they obviously, according to evidence and things I'm seeing and hearing, they did try to do that. And if you remember the look of the body language and the aghast of even Hillary Clinton, like her face was like the mouth opened and dropped and everybody dropped and everybody around them just said, no, you can't. It can't be Donald Trump. Right. I mean, and it was that moment.
Well, in this case, their error was Trump's overperformance, right? They had the allegation, I guess still unproven, to be continue to be fact-based about this, was that the abrupt decision to shut down these electoral counting voting locations, you know, at the Pennsylvania.
You're talking about 2020 now, not 2016.
I'm talking about what just transpired.
About right now.
In both cases, the common denominator was Trump's overperformance, and that their desperate antics to alter things were not up to that overperformance. So in this most recent election, the thesis goes that these offices were shut, these locations were abruptly shut down when it appeared that Trump was overperforming even their expectations in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Wisconsin. And so these curious questions of why would you just shut, that you and I have actually asked, why would you just shut down a vote counting in the largest city in Pennsylvania, you know, a little after midnight on election? That's curious. You know, wouldn't you have kind of had shifts arranged if fatigue or tiredness was an issue, or just kind of work through it? It's an important thing, get the whole world waiting on this outcome. Well, I mean, that's why, is that they didn't really have the process or plan in place to address this vast overperformance, and now you have, like, you know, a car with an out-of-state plates arriving at, you know, polling locations in Michigan and dumping off a bag of 100,000, 130,000 votes, all for Biden, none for Trump, with no down ballot voting too, by the way.
I know.
Did you notice that consistency?
Yes, they didn't vote
in the congressional
races. Well, this is all evidence.
But again, procedurally, like, did it not cross any? Like, so I'm puzzled by people whose job it is to make sure this stuff doesn't happen, how failed they are.
Well,
are we to understand that somebody can walk into a polling location with 130,000, a bag of 130 boxes of all these ballots? They don't have to sign. They don't have to provide any identity. We don't even know who that person. Well, how do we not know who did that?
Our election system is totally screwed up.
How do we not
level.
Know who every brought level. In that? Every who level. Brought well, in that bag? We
should, there are no
they,
rules
They're not
here.
Even asked to sign there any documentation.
No rules. No, there's no rules. But let me continue to make this point, please, for out of time. And that is the body language. Now, think about, Michael, with Joe Biden, who runs, again, the campaign truly and literally from his basement in Wilmington, for sure, and answers no questions. I mean, we know we've been through all of this, but then you think, yet he would come across confidently. And then I mentioned, I played that audio clip a while ago for you for the most extensive and inclusive audio fraud organization in history. Somebody that is having memory problems or failing in health would absolutely, it's a spontaneous utterance, and they put it out there, and it's a truth moment, if that is a truth moment, and he discovered that. But my point is, Biden and the people, as I remember back to that campaign, I got the feeling in the sense that there was a sense of confidence within the Biden campaign that I hadn't seen before, Michael. It was like they were saying, don't worry about it, we got this. And all his operatives were, there was a bit of smugness and a bit of, it's a self-serve. I hadn't seen that before in people that really, like, usually when you want to win a race like that, you have passion, you have nerves, you have all
fighting.
Of that.
Fighting you, for, you're trying
all
to
of that.
The, you're, it's like a job. You know, you're trying to earn
exactly.
the job.
None of
and
that
only,
was in
only
there.
Only one of the two candidates was fighting there. To earn that job in the final days and hours.
Exactly. See?
Trump's in five states, starting a rally in Miami, in Dade County after, you know, like at 12:30 in the morning.
So if you look at all of that, what
he
does that tell
the
you?
He wanted the job, and he felt what he was doing was important to win the job.
Right.
Whereas, as you're correctly saying, Biden, you know, kind of, you know, slugged through this whole thing without any sense of urgency, without really any
None.
Coherent plan or answers for what he would do for the country.
None.
Now his original, by the way, if I were on the left and I were looking at these appointments that he's envisioning putting in place, with all of, you know, big banks, pharmacies, pharmaceutical executives, you know, it's if I were on the left, I would be just burning with fire in anger at what an absolute betrayal this is poised to be in the event that these legal proceedings are not successful, because this guy is undeniably going to be a pawn of the system. I mean, you got, you know, Ron Klain,
well,
venture
we're
capital
done.
Executive, Steve
if
Rickety,
this goes through, we're done. We don't got to worry about the system. If this happens with Joe Biden in the 20th, we're done, Michael. There is no republic left. The banana thing is all over the place here. And, you know, and I think about with the body language of everything we're describing here, and then you see Joe Biden shuffle his feet to the podium. And then you see this level of, it was arrogance, it was ignorance, it was overconfidence, it was smugness. It was something you hadn't seen before that, like I said, if this was the mock of a winning campaign, I would say that the guy would get an award for producing how to run a presidential campaign in the future, because we've never seen that before. How could he win? He couldn't win. There was no way he could win. It's impossible. And you know what just came onto my feed right this moment here? Here we are on Sunday, and here's what I get in my feed right now, Michael. Listen to this. This will really get you excited and give you the warm and fuzzy. President Trump's efforts to subvert the election are unprecedented and experts say damaging to democracy. Here's what you need to know.
Right. That's a very common style of reporting that I referenced earlier. Everything is designed to raise any degree of question about any statement or position held by Trump or any of his associates or any of us like me that are involved in basically defending or articulating these principles, but it's reverse psychology also. Do you see the reverse psychology? who's really subverting democracy? Isn't the subversion of democracy an electoral system this vulnerable to electoral frauds, guys jumping off the bags? See, when you say that he's subverting democracy, when in fact he's trying to get to the bottom of what has transpired here and defend representative democracy, you don't just tarnish Trump. You take the burden off of the individuals who should be the centerpiece of this focus right now. You know, so how many Americans know about Symantec? How many Americans even know about that story that I just recited about Michigan? How many people know about Philly? How many people know that not one of those mail-in ballots was assessed and monitored by any Trump or GOP poll watcher? And we are expected to just sort of accept all of this. This is the message. Accept it. We have the power. You don't. We determine who the president is. You don't. And if you dare stand up and try to challenge what we're trying to do, we will disparage you with all of these adjectives like subverting American democracy when this brave president, to his credit, is trying to get to the bottom of what actually transpired here. And two credible figures who have an extraordinary history of truth telling and fighting the right fights on the right side of causes are trying to litigate an immensely complicated as they allege, criminal conspiracy that was focused on altering maybe sizable numbers of votes in this election. The burden is off of them.
That's right. Well, that
let me just give you this quote. Let me just, because you got to go to the source here. In my view, I mentioned Sidney Powell, and so Sidney Powell's reviewed evidence, and no other American has reviewed. None of these people calling it, you know, none of these media figures have reviewed this stuff, and nor should they be entitled to. It's not their role. This is evidence that's going to have to be admitted as into courts of law. Courts are going to have to agree to hear it. They're going to have to, you know, assess it. Ultimately, decisions are going to have to be made about its credibility. But this is Sidney Powell, who I think highly of. We have so much evidence. I feel like it's coming into a fire hose. They can stick a thumb drive in the machine. They can upload software to it, even from the internet, from Germany or Venezuela even.
That's right.
Identified mathematically the exact algorithm they've used and planned to use from the beginning. So we can't predict necessarily and probably shouldn't predict what the outcome of these investigations and proceedings are going to be. But the burden is on taking them seriously and getting to the bottom of them. That used to be the role of some of these institutions that now are so zealously supporting the Biden candidacy that they don't even care to know the facts. Let's find out what the facts are. The facts to me are immensely concerning. We got to mobilize the American people, stand up for representative democracy, acknowledge the possibility of an immense threat, and go from there.
It should give us a lot of thought right now and what's ahead, people. But again, the questions to put out there, how does America respond? Well, that's on the table. And how do Americans respond, all one and the same, absolutely on the table in this transformational moment in America's history. Thank you, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the journey here. And we continue onward. It's time to get involved and get loud.